Now, a new poll from the Associated Press and NORC shows that about half of Americans say they would get a coronavirus vaccine once it was ready for the public. Another 30% said they were unsure. 20% said they'd refuse a vaccine. That's causing concern for some public health officials who say vaccination is a crucial part of the fight against the coronavirus. Dr. James Conway is a pediatric infectious disease specialist and associate director for health sciences at UW-Madison's Global Health Institute. Dr. Conway, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So here we have half of Americans saying, yeah, I'd get that vaccine if and when it's available, but half not so sure or sure that they wouldn't. What do you make of those results?
Well, troubling, obviously, because, you know, to really shut down transmission of any particular disease, you know, you need to get to the point where you've got a herd immunity, you know, enough of the community that are immune that are at levels of 70 or 80% usually to slow down transmission. And so, you know, what we don't know yet from the disease itself is how long the immunity lasts after people have it. But even if we, you know, got to the point where 10 or 20% of the population had had the disease, if only 50% get the vaccine, we're struggling to get enough herd immunity to really shut this thing down the way we'd all like to.
It sounds like many who would refuse the vaccine are concerned about how safe it might hypothetically be. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, with any medical product, you know, there's basically two pieces to approval: efficacy and safety. You know, does it work and is it safe to use it? And as people, I think, are aware, the process of developing a vaccine, you know, generally takes about 8 to 10 years, because as you go through the different phases of testing, one of those is basically following people who have received the vaccine for some period of time to see how long do they retain their immunity and do they develop any, you know, late side effects. I think the early side effects are the ones that are easily identified, but I think that's the usual process, and I think most people are aware of that. And you couple that with then this, you know, questioning of science and rise of vaccine hesitancy, and look at how these vaccines are being proposed to be developed, which is really trying to fast track them. And I think it is, you know, somewhat understandable why people would have some questions and some concerns about that process.
And that speaks to the vaccine issue more widely. It's not just a matter of having the science in place and hopefully developing an effective and safe vaccine. There's the issue of how you reach out to the public, how you build that trust.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's true with, you know, any vaccine. And this one obviously is, you know, has an imperative given what the world situation is with the pandemic. But it is, you know, one of those things that I think even those of us on the scientific side acknowledge, is that, you know, with the drive to have something rapidly available, I wouldn't say that corners are being cut, but there are certainly new processes being used to move through things and trying to leapfrog along the timeline. And so, you know, I think it's understandable that people have questions. I think what, you know, my group of people and my network thinks when, you know, this kind of study comes out is that it's actually very helpful, because it does give us clear marching orders for what the public needs, both as far as data and then as far as how we message that data to make sure that they are comfortable, that they are receiving something that's safe and is worthwhile.
Talking to Dr. James Conway from the UW-Madison Global Health Institute, looking at a potential coronavirus vaccine, a ways down the road yet on that. But already in a new survey, half of Americans say, yeah, I'd get that vaccine when it's up and running. Another half either not sure or pretty clear that they won't do it. We heard from Jason on Facebook in that last category, who says he won't get the coronavirus vaccine because he trusts his natural immune system and doesn't trust the World Health Organization or the CDC. What do you think of that response? That's clearly part of that 20% who don't want that vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, life is a series of gambles. And, you know, I think with this particular disease, I think people are making some individual decisions. You know, I think that depending on people's risk categories, you know, there are certainly higher risk groups versus the general population. I think the things that have both surprised us and made us a little bit more alert and certainly more intent about this disease are two things. One is recognizing that about a third of the U.S. population actually fits into one of the higher risk categories. And so, you know, we do have a substantial number of people who are either in an age group that's at higher risk for complications or have underlying medical conditions. The other is that, it is somewhat unpredictable in how it affects different people that are in lower age group risks or in lower risk groups based on lack of comorbidities or other medical conditions. So that while, you know, most of the younger and lower risk individuals, you know, act like that and do reasonably well, there are a fair number of reports, and you can look at the national epidemiology of people who otherwise, you know, wouldn't fit into a risk factor group who don't do well with it. The other piece of that is, you know, it's not necessarily just about the individual and how they might do with the disease, but it's really about what can we do to decrease the circulation and protect those members of the population who are the most high risk. And so, you know, I think one of the things when you look at this survey that was done, you know, 93% of the people that said they would get the vaccine would do it to protect themselves. But a substantial number who agreed to get it were also agreeing to do it because they thought it would protect their family or they thought it would protect other people in the community. 88% were doing it to protect their family from being exposed to them if they contracted the disease. And 78% said they were doing it so that they would offer some community protection. So I think that's the other piece that people need to think about when they're making these kinds of decisions, is not only for themselves as an individual, but how it may impact people that are in their own networks. And like I said, you know, with a third of the U.S. population fitting into these high-risk categories, you know, that means that I'd say most of us have a substantial number of people in our lives who are those high-risk individuals. And so that is a secondary reason that people need to think about as they make these decisions.
Well, and that fits into the unique nature of what we know about this novel coronavirus, right? This idea that a lot of people will get it and not even know they had it, which sounds like good news, and it is for them, but it's bad news in that it's really easy for that person still to spread it to other people. That's maybe one of the most profound cases for the vaccine, right?
That is absolutely true, and there's been a lot of data that's come out this week that suggests that there probably are more asymptomatic individuals who have been infected. There was an interesting study that came out in a journal called Thorax that looked at a cruise ship that went to Antarctica that left just in March, just as this was all getting rolling. And by the time it returned, even though most of the people on board had done well and were healthy, you know, seven had to be evacuated because they had severe coronavirus. But when they did blood testing on all the people that were on this cruise ship, 81% were positive, where, you know, far less than that had anything resembling symptoms. So I think that's the part that does trouble us, is that it's pretty clear that there are members of the population who may not know they have the disease and can certainly shed and transmit this infection to others.
Talking to Dr. James Conway, he's a public health expert and pediatric infectious disease specialist from UW-Madison's Global Health Institute. We're talking about new survey results that show about half Americans say they would get a coronavirus vaccine once it's tested, developed, and released. Another half either unsure or say they'd refuse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you get a coronavirus vaccine as soon as it's ready for the public? Do you think vaccines are an important part of protecting public health? Would you want to be in the experimental stage? Would you be willing to try the experiment or try the vaccine as it's being developed in the experiments that are going on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now about why some Americans say they're nervous about getting a coronavirus vaccine if and when it's developed. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you get it when it's released? What questions do you have about how vaccines are developed, produced, and shared with the public? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, I've had some health problems in the past, but I'd just be wondering, well, if there's somebody who needs the vaccine more than I do, should I wait to hold off? But if there's millions who aren't going to be taking it, then it's a shorter line for me to stand in, and I won't necessarily be taking it before somebody else who might deserve it better.
Dennis, thanks a lot for that call. So, Dr. Conway, if there's a stage where, yes, we have a vaccine, but no, we don't have tons of it, how do we prioritize people like Dennis or others who might get it first?
Yeah, Dennis, that you raise a really, really important and very interesting concept, which is, you know, I think it's obvious to everybody that even if there is some kind of breakthrough and some vaccines do become promising and start to go into development, you know, the odds that we would have 8 billion doses for, you know, plus for everybody on Earth. And, you know, I think most people anticipate that if this is like flu vaccines, that you might even need multiple doses. So then we're talking about 16 or 17 billion doses. That's certainly not going to become available quickly. And so there will have to be some real thought about what's the priorities in where you deliver these kinds of vaccines. You know, we went through this exercise at some level a couple of years ago during one of the Ebola outbreaks when there was a frantic worldwide push to develop an Ebola vaccine about 5, 6, 7 years ago. And there were ethics groups that came together to try to balance two concepts. One is, since these things are still relatively new, you know, you certainly don't want to, you certainly want well-informed people to consent to get the vaccine. And you also want to try to protect people that might be at high risk. And so one of the discussions then was, would health workers be the group that should be prioritized? Because they certainly know enough to know how to consent and what the risks are with these things. And we know, you know, from the data that came out from CDC this week that, you know, 60,000 health workers in the United States have been infected and 300 have died from COVID-19 already. And so there is, you know, perhaps some reason to look at that group as a group that would be prioritized. However, you know, then you turn around and say, but, you know, we're saying that a third of the population have these other high risk conditions that put them at high risk for having severe outcomes. You know, is that fair? And I do think that, you know, the good thing that we're doing with all of this is having these conversations now rather than waiting until the vaccines actually become available. So I think this really is something that people need to think about and talk about. You know, one of the things that we also need to think about is how are vaccines developed and who are they originally tested in? And in general, you know, most of the testing is done in healthy young people, you know, usually 18 to 45. It tends to skew more to males. Because people are always nervous about doing vaccine testing in women of childbearing age that could become pregnant. And there does unfortunately happen to be a propensity to test more in whites than in populations of color. Yet we all have been seeing the news that, again, it's high-risk older individuals and, you know, particularly populations of color that seem to be very affected by this disease. And so, is it right to then go immediately to prioritizing and giving it to those high-risk groups who may not even be the groups that are primarily having the vaccine tested? So Dennis raises a great point that these are things that really need to be sorted out, and I think everybody needs to be comfortable early before we even have vaccines and people start scrambling to try to figure out who should be getting them.
Thanks for the call, Dennis. We'll go to Jody now in Stoughton. Jody, hi.
Hi. I have a comment, and as far as getting the vaccine myself, I am hesitant about it and listening to the program and the comments and such, that my hesitancy comes from how the virus has been handled itself thus far as giving us information and how it's changed. And so that's where my uneasiness comes from, is how things have been handled thus far.
Jody, thanks a lot for the call. And Dr. Conway, there's been criticism of different global, national, state agencies, how they've handled it. Part of the story, though, is our understanding of the disease has been changing over time. How do we communicate that initial uncertainty in a way that, you know, lets people know, hey, what we think today may change in a week or two?
Yeah, it's been very difficult. I think this is the first, you know, real pandemic that we've had where the transparency of how science works and how these things happen has been right out there for the public. You know, the last big pandemic we had was 2009 with the H1N1 influenza, and, you know, social media and all these things, you know, just weren't quite as robust as they are now. And so I think what you're seeing is, like, every little thing that is discovered or postulated is made public. And so I think, you know, whether you're on the scientific side like I am or whether you're part of the general public, it's like you're getting deluged. I mean, it's almost like you're trying to drink out of a fire hose some days. There's so much information coming out. And, you know, this is how science works, but it usually does it behind the scenes. You know, anything that's discovered in science doesn't really become an accepted fact until it's been replicated over and over and over and over again. And then it sort of becomes one of those things that we accept as the truth. You know, what you're seeing is one group discovers one thing, often posting and making these things public before they've even been peer reviewed and published formally in a scientific journal. But this new world that we're in, things are coming out and, you know, often getting then refuted within a few weeks. And so I totally understand Jody's point that it is a little difficult to know exactly who's in charge and what's the truth, because things do seem to be changing. Vaccines are really, you know, from a different standpoint, treated and considered very differently, even from medications. I mean, they tend to be tested in larger groups than most medications. And again, they usually have this very longitudinal process of development before they ever get to the point where they're given to people. You know, we often say that about one in 100 vaccines that is proposed and attempted ever even makes it to the general public. You know, and I think I'm reassured some days that, you know, there's 200 plus different vaccines being worked on for this disease now. So I'm actually pretty hopeful that there at least are one or two out there that probably are winners that will actually provide some immunity. But trying to figure out a way then to demonstrate and explain to the public, you know, that there really is a lot of different experiments that goes on before they would ever actually put it into a vaccine, I understand is going to be challenging because of how people have dealt with the amount of information that we've been shared or dumped on us over these last couple months.
Dr. Conway, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Rob. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Dr. James Conway with UW-Madison's Global Health Institute. He's a pediatric infectious disease specialist. He was with us today to talk about a new poll showing that about half of Americans say they would get a coronavirus vaccine when it's available, another half saying they're either unsure or would refuse. Tune in to Central Time on Monday for more on coronavirus vaccine efforts. We'll talk to a molecular biologist about what it will take to get a vaccine as soon as the next 12 to 18 months. That's Monday at 3:45 on Central Time.